file number A230496 in the matter of the appeal by Primrose School of Arden Hills and Shoreview of the order of license revocation. And because we are recording the proceeding as well as live streaming, we do ask counsel when you approach the bench to make sure to identify yourself for the record. The podium, as you see, it can go up and down. Well, you maybe can't see it from there, but there's a button in the front. And so if you need to lower it a bit or increase it, although they were a little taller in the last hearing than you maybe need. And then also the timer clock is on there, so we ask you to pay attention to that as well, of course, for purposes of the time allotted. And so, counsel for appellant, when you're ready, you may approach, and when you're ready to begin, identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Michael Fondungala. I represent the relator in this matter. The amended final order of the commissioner in this case should be overturned for the following reasons. The commissioner did not provide any reason for why she was amending her order after she received a request for reconsideration. Requests for reconsiderations typically should be taken only, or there should be an amendment only if there is some new evidence or something that the court missed. There was none in this particular case. Judge Kimberly Middendorf conducted a hearing in the case. She listened to the witnesses. She reviewed the evidence and made recommendations to the commissioner. Now, these recommendations were based on the facts and the evidence presented. The commissioner received the recommendations. She reviewed them and agreed with the findings and conclusions and overturned the decision of the department to revoke the license of Primrose. The exception that was filed by the agency, which was filed the last day by the department, and following their motions to reconsideration, provided no new evidence that Judge Medindov missed or any testimony that she did not consider.
I may be mistaken, but I thought that the commissioner noted that there was information that was missed, essentially, that she hadn't considered the exceptions.
Correct. Those were exceptions that were supposed to be filed before she made her decision. But these exceptions do not bring anything new. They're just basically the arguments of the department for what the administrative judge should consider. But the person who makes the decision is the administrative law judge, who listened to the witnesses, who determined or assessed their credibility, and who made these recommendations to the administrative law judge. The exceptions that were filed added nothing new. And so since they were missed, the department had to file a motion for reconsideration, which the commissioner did receive. But the commissioner now amended her order that she had issued before. But the basis of that amendment, she did not state why she was amending it. She did not state that, I'm sorry, I failed to consider X, Y, Z. And since they filed this exception, yes, X, Y, Z, that we're considering at this time, to give a reason why she was changing her final order that she had issued before. The commissioner's conclusion that the department established reasonable cause to believe that Mrs. Lomel, who was the therapist for the child, was affiliated with the daycare within the meaning of the statute, because Ms. Lomel provided services to the child at Primrose, is arbitrary, is not in accordance with the law. The statute is very clear. Affiliation was not defined by the statute. So Judge Medindov defined what affiliated means, to be closely associated with another in an independent or subordinate position. Ms. Lomel, who was the therapist, was not affiliated with Primrose. Ms. Lomel is an employee of Lovers. Lovers is the one that is affiliated to the child and the parent of the child that gave permission for Lovers to come into the daycare to do services for this child. Lovers was already doing services for this child at home. The mother saw an opportunity, because this child was not taking a nap, for lovers to come into the daycare during the nap time to do a short session of therapy. And Primrose agreed to do that. There's no affiliation between Primrose and Lovers Institute or Ms. Lomé, who works for Lovers. So,
am I correct, counsel, that the commissioner in the amended order actually used the identical, landed on the same definition, but just came up with a result your client disagreed with?
That is different, which is not...
So what's the error, though? Because as you say, it's undefined, and you have all these facts, and my hunch is that whichever way the result, using that definition, we probably would have affirmed it, because what's the basis for finding an error when the court... The commissioner was reviewing those same facts.
Right. The commissioner agreed to this same fact before. She did not provide any reason why she was amending it at this time. And that's where the arbitrariness
comes. But I'm referring to specifically, though, the finding that she was affiliated and then made reference to the use of the facility as the basis for being dependent upon, I think was the part of the definition as well.
Right. The Lovers Institute was not dependent on Primrose. Remember that on Primrose. Remember, they provide therapy to this child at home, and this was just one opportunity the mother saw to provide therapy for this child during a nap time. Primrose could at any time say, or the child could decide to take a nap, and there will be no more of these services. So there was no dependency between Primrose and Lovers Institute. It was a request that was made, and which Primrose honored. So if you look at dependency does not, it means, I think it has some permanency to it. It has to be something that happens on a continuous basis. There have only been three of these sessions that had happened before this inspection. So they were not dependent on Primrose for this therapy. They do therapy at home.
My understanding is that the finding was based on the fact that that Primrose was providing physical space for the therapy to occur, and that is in the amended order, that's what the commissioner based her decision on in terms of determining that Lovas was affiliated with Primrose. Isn't that correct?
That is what the commissioner based it on, the fact that they were providing physical space.
Okay, and that was going to be on an ongoing basis, right? So it was going to be regular and occur with frequency of some kind.
It's not on the record, and we do not know whether that was going to be something that will be continuous. This child could choose to, or the child could change and start taking a nap, which will not give an opportunity for this to happen. The mother used the fact that the child was not taking a nap at nap time to use this time at Primrose. So this could change. It was not something that was permanent.
Would you disagree that if they were going to continue therapy and the child didn't decide to take a nap, that it would have continued to occur in that location, in a classroom that Primrose authorized Lovas to use?
It could have, depending on how the child was making progress in that therapy. It could get to a point where the child did not need therapy.
Okay. Am I correct, counsel, following the same discussion we're having, the exception, which wasn't present here, although now it's part of the contingent requirements that's in the law anyway of the licensure, is to sign the child out of school and with parental consent, I believe. So if that had all occurred, would the counseling still occur in the school lawfully?
Yes.
Okay, so the only difference would be she signed out and getting a parent consent, I believe, was the other requirement.
Right, the only thing that was missed that would have kept the therapy continuing was that the child was not signed out. And Primrose argued that signing out the child would have been detrimental to the child. If there was a fire or anything, the child would not be accounted for and would not be covered under insurance. And remember, this is nap time. So it would mean that you have to sign the child out and then sign the child back in when the child goes back to class. So that was why they did not do that. But to answer your question, yes, therapy would have continued.
And can I ask you, maybe I'll ask counsel for responding too. I didn't quite see an answer to this. The background check that the counselor had to go through for her licensure, how different, if at all, is that background check from the background check that the Department of Human Services requires for those under your client's supervision?
There's no difference. It's the same. The Department of Human Services does this through a software or a portal now that they call NetStudy. Every person who works with vulnerable people, you have to go through that NET study program, and the provider pays money for the program, then the therapist or the healthcare practitioner has to go to some location and do fingerprinting and take a picture. So it's the same thing. It's not different. So, and I think we made that argument in our brief that Ms. Lomel was already fingerprinted. So Ms. Lomel was qualified to work. There was no restriction on Ms. Lomel working with children or people of disability or vulnerable adults. Now, the commissioner's conclusion that Ms. Lomel was not under continuous direct supervision by Primrose staff while providing services to the child is not in accordance with the law. If you look at the statute defines continuous direct supervision to mean that an individual is within sight or hearing of the program's supervising individual and capable at all times to intervene to protect the child. The testimony that was given shows that Ms. Lomel and other staff were coming in and out of where this therapy was occurring. They were within sight, they were within hearing, but the commissioner came to the amended conclusion, which she changed what she had done before, was that the door was closed, that the teacher had other children in the room, and the teacher was not responsible for supervising the child, and so was not within hearing or sight. The law only requires that the provider be within hearing or sight. And given the testimony and the videos that were presented here, the child was within sight of Primrose staff. And so that the conclusion by the judge was not correct and not within what the statutes required. The other issue that came up was that the commissioner then reversed her decision that Primrose had withheld or knowingly withheld relevant information or provided false information or misleading information to the department. Again, this is not supported by the evidence in the record. Judge Middendorf defined what untrue statement was, or in this particular case, is knowingly making a statement with an intent to mislead. The statements and evidence in the record are very clear that Mr. Kalemani was not there during the inspection. When he came and there was an exit interview, an issue arose as to whether Ms. Ledford was in the room at any time. He volunteered. He admitted before volunteering that Ms. Ledford was not in the room during the time that the child was receiving therapy. But Ms. Ledford was in that room at some time. He volunteered to produce video evidence to show that Ms. Ledford was in the room. And the video evidence shows that she entered the room. Testimony from Ms. Hogger, who was the manager, also showed that other therapists entered in and came out of the room. And next door, there was a teacher with children. And so, for the commissioner to conclude that information was withheld, again, is not supported by the record. The record shows that Ms. Ledford was with the child at some point during the therapy, and it also shows that Primrose staff were also there and not during the time that the child had, the entire time that the child had therapy. So it was during the time that they were going in and out. So there were always
counsel,
people around.
I do have a question about that. I did listen to the exit interviews that occurred between Primrose and the investigator. And the question that the investigator was trying to get at, which I think it was the director understood, was whether or not there was somebody who was present with the child and the outside third party mental health provider the entirety of the time that they were in the room together. She was not asking, was there somebody in there only when I was in there for that 30 seconds and looked in through the window? And so, you know, it seems that, in fact, there was a statement or statements that were made that could have been perceived as being for the purpose of being untruthful or misleading. And I think it was focused on misleading. My question, I guess, is we defer to the agency's determinations. We don't get to review the underlying evidence de novo. And so, you know, on what basis should we, you know, overturn that credibility finding that that they made?
The commissioner did not listen to them at trial. This whole thing was corrected at trial. There was testimony from Mr. Calameni as to what he said and as to what he was why he was providing the video and what he was providing the video to establish. It was very clear at trial that it was not to establish that this there was a Primrose staff for this child all along. And the reason that came up was because of a statement that Ms. Delaney, the inspector, made. She made a statement that people like you have a reason for lying or something to that effect. And so Mr. Calameni was trying to prove to her that he was not lying and offered to provide these videos to show that there was somebody there some of the time. It was not to show that there was somebody there all the time. I think your question was clarified during trial. Thank you. I think my time is up.
Very well. Thank you, counsel. You will have 5 minutes at rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you may approach him when ready. Identify yourself and begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, my name is R.J. Dietrich. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the respondent, the Commissioner of Human Services, in this matter. Your Honors, this is a straightforward case about two issues. One, whether the relator, a licensed child care center, committed a background study violation by allowing a child and an outside service provider, Ms. Sarah Lamel, to be alone together in a room. And two, whether the relator then went on to provide false and misleading information regarding that background study violation. Now, as to the background study violation, there's no dispute in this matter that the child and Ms. Lamel were alone together in a room. At the hearing before the administrative law judge, the relator actually admitted that this was a background study violation and conceded that the appropriate sanction for it was a $200 fine, which is the sanction that was ultimately imposed. Now, relator then went on, relator's owner and controlling individual then went on to provide false and misleading information saying that the child and Ms. Lamel were not alone without a teacher of our own, when he admitted in his testimony at the hearing that he knew at the time he said that there was a period of time that they were alone and that there was a background study violation as a result. Now, the Department of Human Services is required under the Department of Human Services Background Studies Act in Minnesota Statute Chapter 245C to conduct background studies on individuals who have unsupervised access to children in licensed child cares and other programs. Precisely to protect those individuals in those programs. And the department is required, if it finds during that background study for certain information involving criminal history or maltreatment, to disqualify those people
from having that access. As I asked counsel for appellant, is there any exception in that for someone who already has a background study or at least a recent enough one? Because it sounds like it's undisputed here, I think, that she was required and she's licensed by the state as well, which makes sense probably for the same reasons you're just indicating. Every department agency involving working with kids will require, for licensure purposes, a background study. So I'm wondering where that fits in here because it seems a bit inflexible, should I say, or silly to, you know, to require multiple background studies unless they all do something different, and maybe that's kind of my question. Would that study be any different than the one she would have already gotten, and does that have an impact on whether there's a violation?
Your Honor, the background study that the testimony indicated she had already had was not a background study conducted by the Commissioner of Human Services. It was a background study conducted by another agency hired by the LOVAS Institute.
That's what I wanted to... What's the difference? Can you tell me, are background studies, are there multiple contractors that do background studies? So maybe there is an actual different, they look for different things. Is that the reason? Do you know?
Your Honor, I don't know precisely what the background study that was conducted, that Lovas had conducted, was looking for. I do know that the Background Studies Act specifically defines the background study that is required, and it's a background study. It's a review of records conducted by the commissioner, and that's in 245C.02. So this doesn't meet that requirement, and I don't know if that...
Hence the admission that it was a violation, I assume, because that particular type of background had not been done.
Yes, Your Honor. And I don't know if the background study that was conducted would have access to things like maltreatment determinations. The commissioner can also make a preponderance of the evidence determination, even if there's no conviction that a person committed a certain act that disqualifies them. So I don't see any way that the background study that was conducted by another agency, not the commissioner, would qualify under the statute. So the requirement to have a background study is for a person affiliated with a child care center who has unsupervised access to children in the child care center. And that term affiliated is admittedly not defined in the statute, but the department, the commissioner and the ALJ use the same definition, which is closely related and typically involving a dependent or subordinate relationship and or position. And the commissioner appropriately found and stated that the Ms. Lomel was dependent on the provider, relator, for space in the child care center to provide the therapy. She couldn't have gone into the child care center to provide the therapy without their permission.
Is it your position that affiliated is ambiguous or unambiguous as used here?
Yeah, I think it's unambiguous. I mean, the statutory definition applies. The dictionary definition clearly applies to this situation.
So we don't need to look at legislative history or the purpose and the intent behind the act?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe you do. But if you do look at the rest of the statute, 245C.02 subdivision 6A, it's clear that affiliated is not supposed to be defined in the way that the ALJ seemed to define it. The ALJ seemed to limit it to employees, contractors, or other persons providing services on behalf of the child care center. And the statute specifically says that it's not limited to that, that it includes any other person who has unsupervised contact or access to children in the child care center, regardless of whether they're providing program services.
It would then be your position that the way that the ALJ defined affiliated is not a reasonable way to define it?
Yes, I mean, not that specific definition that the ALJ used, but the ALJ then went on to say, I believe that the ALJ said something like, surely the mischief that the legislature was trying to resolve here was employees or other people providing services on behalf of the child care center not having a background study. And that's clearly not the case. And we know that from what the statute specifically says. That exception that was mentioned earlier also seems to explicitly apply to this type of situation that we have here, where you have an outside service provider who's not providing services on behalf of the child care center coming in to the child care center and providing services, because it only applies to a person who's not providing services on behalf of the child care center and thus requires certain things to happen, like the child to be signed out of the child care center for the duration of the services.
Doesn't that, so as I had asked counsel for appellant that, the only difference would be, I mean, everything could be literally the same, but the child signed out, but the counseling would still be received without anyone else in the room, and that would be okay pursuant to the guidelines because the child signed out.
Yeah, as long as there's three other requirements for that exception. Yeah, if all those requirements are met, then there's no
parental,
issue.
Parental consent was one, isn't it? Or something from the parent, as I recall. What were the other two?
It's parental consent. The program needs to have documentation on site, I believe, of the services that are being provided. And then the last one is that the the outside service provider doesn't have any unsupervised access to children other than that child that they're providing services to. And here there's no no dispute that that exception doesn't apply because relator concedes that the child was not signed out of the program for the duration of time that the services
were provided. The statute also doesn't define supervision?
It does define supervision. It defines continuous direct supervision as opposing counsel referenced the definition as a supervising individual in the program being within sight or hearing of the child at all times sufficient that they can protect the child at all times.
Because it seemed like the ALJ spent time on that part of it too and made findings that there was the child's teacher was next door. And I don't know if there was evidence about what you can hear through the walls or not, but literally that would satisfy it as long as the evidence showed that within hearing, that wouldn't be eyesight. A classroom next door would satisfy that definition?
If the child was within hearing, or if the supervising individual was within hearing and at all times able to intervene to protect the child, then yes, the record certainly doesn't support that that was the case here. I mean, the child was in a room alone with Ms. Lamel behind a closed door. The teacher was in the room next door behind another closed door with her own children that she was supervising. She told Ms. Delaney, the DHS licensor, that she didn't even know why the child was in the room next door to her. She said that she was not supervising the child. Mr. Carmaliani admitted in the exit interview that she wasn't assigned to supervise the child.
That's probably the main point that herself, the teacher, said I wasn't supervising. So that would be the violation right there. You don't have a supervisor, even if you had a question about whether you could hear accessible.
Right, she wasn't listening, you know, so closely that she. There's no evidence that she was listening so closely, or he could even hear what was going on in the other room that she would have been able to intervene at all times. And even if she had been, she then would have had to go through, you know, two closed doors and down a hallway to get to the child. So I don't know how you could say that she could intervene at all times to protect the health, to protect the safety of the child. Your Honors, Ms. Delaney. The DHS license here observed the child and Ms. Lamel alone in the room. She then walked down to the other room, observed teacher, Ms. Ledford, in the other room. She testified that she later walked back and again observed the child and Ms. Lamel alone in the other room. As I said earlier, Ms. Delaney spoke with Ms. Ledford, the teacher, and the teacher told her that she was only briefly in that room to collect board games and then went back to the other room. Which brings me then to the false and misleading information issue. The director was there as well, but the, first of all, let me say, the opposing counsel indicated that there was evidence that Primrose staff were in and out of the room when Ms. Lamel and the child were there. There's no evidence of that. There was evidence that Ms. Ledford went in there once, briefly, and then left. Otherwise, there's no evidence that anyone was in there with the child and Ms. Lamel for the 45 minutes to an hour that the session between them was going on. Now, as to the false and misleading information, Mr. Carmaliani, the controlling individual owner of Relator, was insistent at this exit interview that occurred 2 days after this licensing review where Ms. Delaney observed the issue, was insistent that Ms. Ledford was in the room, that the child and Ms. Lamel were not alone without a teacher of our own, I believe were his exact words, and that as a result, there was no background study violation. And he said that, you know, he would fight the background study violation for months and months, and they would go round and round, and they would go up to the administrative court, and he would get the legislature involved. He very vehemently contested that violation, and yet he admitted in his testimony before the ALJ that he was aware at the time he said those things that there in fact was a violation because there was a period of time when the child and Ms. Lamel were alone in the room. So the false and misleading information piece is clearly supported by the record. And if I could just, with my final minutes, just address this issue with the commissioner amending the order. The relator concedes in his brief that the commissioner is allowed to reconsider an order when there's a mistake. Here, there was a mistake. The commissioner explained in the order that the Department of Human Services timely filed exceptions to the administrative law judge's recommendation, that the commissioner missed those exceptions, and so the commissioner reconsidered the previous order in light of those exceptions, which pointed out the errors in the administrative law judge's initial recommendation, and the commissioner appropriately then and promptly issued an amended order. And relator cites no case law or authority indicating that that is not permitted. And so if there are no further questions, I'd yield the remainder of my time and just ask that you affirm the commissioner's order in all respects.
Oh, I actually do have a question for you. At the end of your brief, you have a footnote about mootness, at least as it goes to the one-year conditional license. In reply, the appellant has said, well, it has to stay on your file for 2 years, so we are actually challenging that. What's your position on that after seeing the reply?
Your Honor, I don't believe that opposing counsel did they that in the fire. I missed that if they did. But that's correct, that is true. And I missed that when I made that argument. So I suppose I wouldn't contest then, wouldn't argue mootness as a result. But I would ask that you certainly affirm the order based on the evidence and the commissioner's findings. Thank you, Your Honor.
Very well. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you'll now have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. One thing I want to mention is that the commissioner does not conduct background studies. The commissioner has contracted this to, I think the company they use now is Indentogo. It's a database that you go do this in, and that database runs the search and then comes out with whether this person is excluded or not, and then you go do fingerprinting and take your pictures. So Ms. Lomel had gone through this process. Ms. Lomel is working with kids who are even more vulnerable than the kids who are in the daycare, because these are autistic kids, and sometimes most of them are nonverbal. And so there's no way Ms. Lomel will be working with these children without having undergone a background study. I think the court needs to look at the legislative history. I know there was some argument about that and some discussions about that. Affiliated is not defined. Yeah, we have two lawmakers defining it differently, the commissioner applying it differently. Both of them arrived at the same definition from the dictionary, but they're applying it differently. The commissioner applies it one way. The administrative law judge provides it another way. Providers need to know in these circumstances, because this is occurring frequently in the state where therapists are going into places like daycares to assist, and then in schools. It's happening also in schools where therapists are going into schools to assist kids who have autism so that they can be able to concentrate on learning why they're dealing with the behaviors. So I think there needs to be some clarification out to what affiliation means so that other providers will know how to go about this. Mr. Kelemeni did admit that there could have been some background study violations. The issue here why all these videos and discussions were happening was because of statements that were made by Ms. Delaney that apparently Mr. Kelemeni was trying to prove that Primrose did not lie. That's why they sent the video, to show that there was somebody at some time with this child. It's very clear in the record that nobody was attesting or insinuating that Primrose had staff that were with this child for the entire duration of the therapy. Now, if there were some mistakes made that the commissioner did not see when she entered her final order and had to amend the order, the commissioner did not state that in her order. Basically, the commissioner just took the order that she had done before and made corrections to it without indicating what went wrong from her order that she was amending. She did not mention those errors, as we hear counsel arguing, We do not see any errors. There is the same testimony, is the same document evidence that was reviewed by the administrative law judge. She agreed to it and then turned around after she gets the exception and basically adopts what the agency or the department was proposing. For that reason, we believe that this is arbitrary and capricious and should be overturned.
It seems like the commissioner did make a statement, though, and said, because the commissioner's order was based on an incomplete record due to an inadvertent administrative error. And so that's the reasoning that the commissioner gave anyways of, we don't have a complete record from the prior order, so I am going to reconsider.
No, she's correct there, but she did not indicate what was different that she saw in that new record to get her to amend her order. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions today and your briefing in the matter. We will now take the matter under advisement. We'll issue a ruling within 90 days. Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you. Thank you.